that if you defeat the snake, I'll admit I was wrong to that stuffy old cat. I'll even apologize to him on bended knees, so there.
On your word as a captain? Matthias pressed. The owl held out a wing and a leg as he recited.
I swear by my captaincy and by my illustrious ancestors, Nyctea and Glacia, that I, Captain Snow, will return the medal and cleave to my oath if you should win against Asmodeus.
The owl broke into laughter again.
This is the easiest bet I ever made. It'll be like taking the wings off a dead butterfly.
Maybe to you, sir, but not to me, Matthias countered. Now, tell me where I may find Asmodeus, Captain.
In the old sandstone quarry, the owl replied. You'll have to cross the river. There are caves in the quarry, passages too. Explore them. You won't find Asmodeus until you are least expecting him. By then it will be too late. You'll be deader than an icicle in hell. Goodbye, mouse.
Matthias turned his back upon the snowy owl and strode off with a string of taunts ringing in his ears.
Nice to have my silver medal back,
jeered the owl.
I'll think of you when I wear it. You should have let me eat you. It'd save you a journey to the quarry. Oh, I almost forgot. You won't be able to give the hare my best wishes. You'll be snug inside the snake.
Matthias walked onwards, ignoring the cruel jibes of the owl, through the farmyard and across the grassland, not stopping until he arrived at the fringe of Mossflower Wood. The shrews broke cover and milled about noisily with their endless questions.
Ha! So you got back then?
Why didn't Snow eat you?
Bet you never seen an owl that size before, eh?
What news of Poison Teeth?
Did you find out where he is?
Don't just stand there. Tell us, tell us.
Fierce quarrelling broke out. Swords were being drawn as Matthias sought out Logalog and took the black stone from him. Shut up and stop fighting, you hooligans, or you'll get to know nothing, Matthias bellowed. An expectant hush descended upon the union members of the Gorilla Shrews of Mossflower. Matthias found it hard to keep the contempt out of his voice. I found Captain Snow. Actually, I was led to him by Squire Julian Gingervere. Does that name ring any bells? There was an embarrassed shuffling in the ranks of the listeners. Many turned their eyes to the ground, particularly Gosum and Logalog. Matthias folded his paws. He stared about in disgust. Oh, yes. I'd just like to thank you all. Especially you, Gosum and Logalog. What a sly, nasty, despicable thing to do, sending me into that barn without a single word of warning about the cat. Logalog ripped the cloth band from his brow and flung it down. He took the stone up in his paw.
Matthias, I speak not only for myself, but for all the Gorilla Union. We are very sorry, you must believe that. It completely slipped our minds. We forgot about the cat. You see, we are shrews, not only by name, but also by nature. We argue, quarrel, bicker, and fight so much among ourselves that we lose sight of the important issues. That is the way it is with us. Please accept our apologies, friend.
Matthias retrieved the stone. I'll forgive you this once. You say you are shrews, and you call me friend. You tell me that you forget. Let me tell you. I am a Red Wall warrior. I always remember who my friends are, and I never forget an injury done to me. However, we will say no more of this. You must listen to me now. What I have to tell you is of great importance. It can change the life of every shrew here. Captain Snow has told me that Asmodeus lives in the old stone quarry across the river. He has given me his promise on oath. If I defeat Asmodeus, the owl will never again take the life of a shrew. When the astonished hubbub had died down, the young mouse continued. Think about it, Gorilla Shrews. It would be a double blessing for you. With Asmodeus dead and Captain Snow held to his oath, you could live in safety from both. And while I'm on the subject, my friend, Julian the Cat, is quite harmless. He will not hunt you. Any time you need something from the barn, you have his permission to take it, providing you do so quietly, with no fighting or arguing. That is all I have to say to you, save for one thing. Lead me to the quarry. Matthias stood patiently waiting as subdued conversation went on all about him. Surely they could not refuse so generous an offer. He tried hard to pick up the threads of talk. Some seemed all for it, but others were apparently reluctant to trust his word. Finally, a small, militant-looking shrew came forward and picked up the stone. He addressed Matthias in a very official manner.
Our rules say that the quarry across the river is not in shrew territory, Mouse. Therefore, we cannot go with you.
Logalog sprang forward and dealt the speaker a mighty blow, laying him flat out on his back.
"You cowardly, ungrateful little fool!" cried Logalog. "How can you say such a thing after all this warrior is trying to do for us?"
Gosum grabbed the stone from the ground.
"Stop, Logalog. You have no right to strike a comrade. He was only stating the facts. Our guerrilla union rules clearly state that no member can be forced to venture beyond official shrew boundaries."
Before Logalog had a chance to reply, a riot broke out. Shrews began kicking, punching, arguing, screaming, wrestling and shouting. The edge of Mossflower Wood was in pandemonium. Matthias held up the stone and tried shouting above the melee. His voice was lost in the uproar. Angrily, he grabbed the nearest shrew and shouted at him.
"Listen, you! Tell me which direction the river is in, or else..."
The struggling creature pointed a paw to the northeast before wriggling from Matthias's grasp to dive headlong into the fray. Fury took hold of the young mouse. He waved the stone and cried out,
"Go on, fight then, little fools, you and your bossy little union. I don't need any of you. I'll go it alone."
And he hurled the stone with a mighty effort. It flew off over the heads of the rioters, disappearing into the wood. Matthias turned on his heel and stormed off towards the river. Chapter 3. An air of apprehension lay across the camp in the meadow. Cheese Thief was dead. Pierced by an immense arrow and dressed in Cluny's best battle armor, he lay amid the wreckage of the leader's tent. Not one of the horde dared go near the gruesome scene, lest they be found in a position of blame upon Cluny's return. Constance peered agitatedly over the parapet. Something was not quite right. She felt it in her nostrils. The badger's worst suspicions were confirmed by the sight of Cluny crossing the road and heading back into the meadow. Constance watched him leap across the ditch. There could be no doubt about it, that rat was definitely Cluny the Scourge. She had killed the wrong rat. Cluny had left his picked band back in the woodlands. They knew what they had to do. It would take a bit of time, but it was a sound, workable plan. Striding swiftly over the meadow, some sixth sense told Cluny that all was not right. His one eye scoured the area. There was the horde, gathered together at the far end. But what had happened to his tent? Cluny could vaguely discern a huddled figure tangled in the wreckage. Speculation was useless. He speeded up his pace. Fangburn met him halfway. Cluny held up a claw, silencing him. He would get to the bottom of things without stuttering excuses. He kicked the tent folds aside, revealing Cheese Thief's stricken face. The great arrow shaft protruded from the ruined armor, his war gear. Cluny glanced backwards and forwards from the abbey to the body. He took in at a quick rate all that had happened. The big badger was peering over the wall. It was her doing. Cluny's brain raced ahead. On the far edge of the meadow, the horde were looking decidedly uneasy. A mistake had been made. The arrow was meant for him. The warlord's fertile mind suddenly came up with an idea of how to turn the situation to his own advantage. Fangburn was, to say the least, surprised. Cluny clapped him heartily on the back and led him across to where the rest of the horde waited apprehensively. Cluny laughed aloud to put them at their ease. He winked his eye roguishly.
"Well, I see my little scheme worked out just fine. We got the dirty traitor, didn't we, Fangburn, my old mate?"
Fangburn was completely baffled, but he knew better than to disagree.
"What? Of course we did, Chief."
Cluny nodded over at where the body lay.
"Do you see that? Well, let it be a warning to you all. I knew what was going on with Cheese Thief. Didn't anyone see him at the battering ram last night acting all high and mighty?"
There was a general murmur of agreement. Most of the rats had been pressed into volunteering as ram carriers by the ambitious Cheese Thief.
"Aye, we saw him, Chief. Chucking his weight about, shouting orders.
He kept me on that ram for 2 hours.
Yeah, you'd have thought he was the commander of the horde."
"Exactly," Cluny shouted. "I'd had my eye on Cheese Thief for quite a while. He was doing a fair piece of ordering about without my permission. Why, I bet he ordered some of you lads around while I was gone."
"He started shoving me around, Chief,"
volunteered Darkclaw indignantly.
"It was do this, fetch that, jump to it. I'm using the Chief's tent. I think Cheese Thief was getting too big for his boots, Chief."
Cluny threw a claw around the speaker's shoulder.
"Thank you, Darkclaw. You're an intelligent captain. You could see as well as I did that Cheese Thief was planning to take control of my trusted horde. Why else would he start using my tent and dressing up in my battle armor?"
The soldiers nodded sagely to each other. Cluny was right. There was no fondness in the ranks for the dead, power-hungry bully. Cluny continued.
"You see, I knew the Badger and her friends were planning to kill me. So I thought I'd kill two birds with one stone. Fool them, and save myself the trouble of having to execute Cheese Thief. In fact, I let the Red Wall crowd do the dirty work for me. I didn't want any of my loyal soldiers put to any trouble. I gave the traitor enough rope, and let our enemies hang him."
Cluny slapped his thigh and burst out laughing. The horde joined him, falling about with merriment at their chief's black joke. What a cunning idea! There was no doubt about it. The Scourge didn't miss a single trick. Cluny waved cheerfully to the distant figure of Constance on the wall.
"My thanks to you, Badger," he shouted. "You did a fine job."
Constance could not hear a thing from the distance of the ramparts, which was just as well in the circumstances. Cluny was almost jovial as he turned to the horde.
"Well, my good warriors, has anything else happened while I was away?"
Kilcony performed one of his most elaborate salutes.
"The tunnel is going very well, Your Honor."
"Good, good," said Cluny. "Anything else to report?"
Mangy Fur and Scumnose piped up jointly.
"We was out searching for Dockleaves, Chief. Way out across those fields over there."
Cluny halted them. He nodded to Scumnose.
"You tell me."
"Well, we was rooting about by some hedges, Chief,"
said Scumnose,
"and we found a whole tribe of dormice fast asleep. So we pounced on them and tied them up in a bunch. Nice big fat ones they are, Chief."
Cluny interrupted.
"Dormice, eh?
You haven't killed them yet, I hope?
Scumnose shook his head vigorously.
Oh, no, Chief. We're keeping them nice and fresh in the ditch there. Do you want to see them? I think they're about 20 all told.
Good. You did well. I want them kept alive,
muttered Clooney as he walked across to the ditch and peered down at the captives. The dormice were huddled miserably together, their necks looped cruelly together on a rope. They whimpered fearfully at the sinister sight of Clooney the Scourge.
Which one of you is the leader?
He snarled. A bedraggled youngish mouse held up a timid paw.
I am, sir. My name is Plumpen. Please let us go free. We have done no harm to any living creature. Violence is against our nature.
We silence, Clooney snapped, or I'll teach you what violence means.
An anguished moan arose from the dormice lying in the ditch. Clooney cracked his tail.
Cut out that cringing, he said contemptuously. You are my prisoners to do with as I like. Oh, don't worry. I won't let them kill you. Yet. I've got other, more useful things in mind. You, Plumpen or whatever your name is, tell your tribe that they won't be harmed as long as you do what I say. For the present, you are to stay down there under guard. Scumnose, Mangyfur?
Yes, Chief.
You two are responsible for these prisoners, said Clooney. See that no creature goes near them. Stand guard night and day. If just one of these dormice is missing, you'll both end up on a roasting spit. Is that clear?
After Cheese Thief's carcass had been disposed of, Clooney sat beneath an awning that had been improvised from the damaged tent. He watched the armorer diligently repairing his prized war gear and fumed inwardly. His equipment had been battered, and he had lost a valuable captain. The Red Wall contingent had stolen a march upon him, and the battering ram had failed miserably. Once again, the thinking was left to him. The Horde were more concerned with licking wounds and feeding their stomachs. Strategy was not their responsibility. However, on reflection, the balance was beginning to swing in his favor again. He now had three possible keys to the Abbey. One was the tunnel, the rats in Mossflower Wood were attending to his second scheme, and the third. Clooney glanced over to the ditch. The capture of the dormice would prove an even more devious avenue to the conquest of Redwall, provided he played his cards right. Early evening saw the attack upon the Abbey get underway once more. Jess Squirrel and Ambrose Spike had joined the ranks of archers. They popped up and down, selecting random targets.
I don't like it, Jess remarked.
Ambrose grunted as he released a feathered shaft at the ditch.
Don't like what, Jess?
The squirrel put aside her bow and sat down under cover of the parapet.
They seem to have slackened off somehow, and we haven't seen much of Clooney lately.
It's not like the Horde to behave in this way. Personally, I think there's something afoot that we don't know of.
Winifred the Otter was standing nearby. She slung a stone hard, nodded in satisfaction at the resultant scream, and joined the two friends.
I'm inclined to agree with you, Jess. The Scourge has probably figured some new move. This attack may only be a cover. By the way, is there any word from Formol and his crew?
Oh, they've still got their ears to the ground, Ambrose said gruffly. Formol says they've heard the odd echo, nothing definite though. Southwest corner is where he thinks they might surface eventually.
Yes, I've heard that too, Jess agreed. We'll have to arrange a warm reception for those filthy vermin when they show up. What baffles me, Winifred mused, is where young Matthias has got to. It's not like him to miss the chance of a battle.
Abbot Mortimer was on his rounds with food. He had been eavesdropping on the conversation and could not help commenting. Do you know, I was just thinking the same thing myself. But we must give Matthias the benefit of the doubt and trust in his judgment. I have a feeling that he could be the salvation of us all. One thing you may rest assured of, wherever that young mouse is, he'll be concerned with the survival of Redwall in one way or another, I'm sure.
Ah, well,
Jess sighed as she picked up her bow and notched an arrow to it.
We'd better make sure he has a home to come back to. On with the war, friends.
The squirrel drew the bow full stretch and stood up. She paused a moment, peering along the U-shaft, then released the string with a vibrant twang. Below, on the edge of the meadow, a creature fell transfixed. One stoat less to carry out Cluny's commands. Chapter 4. Matthias set up a solitary makeshift camp that night. After a frugal meal, he wrapped his habit tight about his body to ward off the chill breeze and settled down to sleep. Alone with his bitter thoughts about the ungrateful shrews, the young mouse finally dozed off. Sometime before dawn, he became aware of movement and sound nearby. Carefully, Matthias slitted one eyelid open. His feet were warm. He felt the extra weight of a blanket that had been draped over him while he was asleep. The guerrilla union of shrews in Mossflower had returned. Small campfires had been lighted, and breakfast was being prepared. Matthias decided that it must be nearly daybreak. Turning on his side, he kept up the pretense of sleep. Ignoring the presence of the shrews, he drifted back into a warm slumber. It was fully daylight when he reawakened. The sun beat down through the trees, mixing its rays in the pale blue smoke of the cooking fires. Logalog brought toasted wheat cake and a bowl of herb tea. Sitting up, Matthias accepted them noncommittally. He ate and drank in silence, while Logalog folded the blanket and packed it away. The shrew stood beside him and gave a short, nervous cough.
Matthias, I'm sorry about what happened yesterday. As you can see, we've decided by majority vote to come along with you.
The young mouse continued to ignore him. Logalog slumped down.
Matthias, listen. We shrews of the Union try to run our lives along democratic lines. You must not think too harshly of us. The shrew who spoke out against accompanying you was only stating chapter and verse of the act. I was wrong to hit him. Gosum did right to uphold his argument.
Matthias arose and shouldered his bundle. Look, Logalog, don't talk to me about your silly rules, subsection 3, paragraph 4, and all that nonsense. You are either with me or against me. I haven't got valuable time to waste on a lot of shrew union rules and disputes. Logalog picked up his pack and smiled broadly at the young mouse.
Matthias, my friend, we are with you to a shrew. Tooth, claw, and nail. Lead on, bold warrior.
Matthias laughed in open relief.
Well, let's get started, friend Logalog. We've got an adder to fight and a sword to win.
Surrounded by a band of shrews that had started quarrelling over the best route to the quarry, Matthias marched stolidly forward. They trekked through the trees, leaving Mossflower Wood far behind, across open ground, giving the farmhouse a carefully wide berth, breaching hawthorn hedges and spanning dried-out ditches through several fields that lay fallow in the summer stillness. A halt was called at lunchtime on the banks of a slow, broad river. Matthias sat next to Gosum during the midday meal. It would be the last cooked food they would get. Stealth and secrecy would be the order of the day upon the other side of the river. No fires, no noise. Matthias flicked a pebble into the water.
How are we supposed to cross this lot? He asked.
Gosum spoke through a mouthful of bread.
Logalog, how else? That's how he got his name, you know.
His father and his father's father before him were all called Logalog. The whole family were all ferry shoes on this river. If you needed to cross the water, you stood on the bank and shouted, Logalog. Here, let's see if it still works.
Gosim walked to the river's edge. Cupping her paws around her mouth, she called in a ululating voice.
Logalog, Logalog, Logalog.
The older shrew appeared out of a reed bed, balanced upon a large floating tree trunk, which he propelled skillfully with a long pole into the side of the bank. Angrily he sprang ashore, upbraiding Gosim.
Pudding-headed shrew, do you have to broadcast the fact we're here? Shouting out like a great foghorn? We'd better strike camp and get across now before someone comes.
I was only showing Matthias how to call for the ferry shrew, Gosim muttered surlily.
Is that all? Said Logalog heatedly. Then why don't you show him the snake tracks in the mud there? Or didn't you notice them? Asmodeus passed through here not 4 hours ago. He's probably gone hunting in Mossflower Wood. It's a mercy we didn't bump into him. He might come back this way before the day is through.
Matthias stared in horrified fascination at the broad, slimy path that had been left in the mud by the snake. The shrews had all clambered hastily aboard the strange craft.
Hurry along, Matthias! All hands on deck!
Logalog hissed. Despite the danger of the enterprise, the young mouse actually enjoyed the ride across the river on the tree trunk. Several of the shrews dug lines out of their packs and fished successfully, amassing quite a tidy little catch before the ferry nosed into the opposite bank with a gentle bump. The shrews disembarked, and Matthias helped Logalog to conceal the ferry in some bulrushes.
I was thinking, Matthias mused, do you suppose we could all hide somewhere? That way we might see Asmodeus return and track him to his lair.
That's exactly what I had planned myself, the shrew replied. If we spread out along the bank and remain hidden, then we'll stand a good chance of spotting Poison Teeth. It's a good idea, but I can see a drawback. Supposing the adder catches the scent of shrews, there are so many of us that it's a distinct danger.
Then again, Matthias argued, would it not be better if we made our way to the quarry and waited there? Asmodeus is bound to head for home.
I wish it were that simple, my friend, Logalog replied. The land across the quarry offers no concealment, too flat and bare. Poison Teeth is full of ancient cunning, too. He may have a secret entrance outside the quarry itself. I think it's best we wait here. I'll spread the comrades out in a line. We'll all keep watch.
Throughout the long afternoon, Matthias lay hidden at the base of a lilac bush. He was within calling distance of shrews secreted a short distance away, as they were of their neighbors farther along. Fully a half mile of the bank was covered in this fashion. Whoever spotted Asmodeus was to report, after letting 1 minute elapse, to Matthias, who was positioned roughly at the center of the line. Gosim and Logalog were stationed on either flank. The blazing sun hung over the watchers like a fiery disk. Matthias kept his sights on the river and the ground in front of him, not daring to move, whether to eat, drink, or scratch. He was forced to endure the unwelcome attention of inquisitive flies and insects that buzzed about and walked across him at their leisure. Often he would focus so hard that his imagination played tricks. A slight ripple upon the water or a vagrant breeze through the grass became Asmodeus. He would blink and reassure himself that it was only a product of his tensed mind. The young mouse lost track of time until he became aware of the sun starting to sink in a reddening sky heralding the twilight. Surely the snake must pass this way soon. As complete darkness descended, a shrew sneaked up through the grass and tapped Matthias's shoulder.
What's the matter? Has Asmodeus been sighted?
Matthias asked. The shrew pointed out along the flank that Gosim headed.
I don't know, Mouse. You'd better come and see for yourself. I'll go and get Logalog.
Matthias scrambled out from beneath the lilac. Something must have gone wrong. Throwing caution to the winds, he dashed along the riverbank. Other shrews left their hiding places and followed him. Gosim was seated upon the open ground, her eyes wide with fright, teeth chattering madly, her whole body trembling like a leaf. Logalog came racing up. Matthias shouted to him,
"Gosim's in a state of shock. Help me. Let's get her into the water."
Grabbing Gosim between them, they rushed her into the shallows and ducked her under the surface of the river. She came up spluttering but coherent.
"Giant poison teeth. The snake, Asmodeus. He was here. I didn't spot him until it was too late. He's taken Mingo. Gave him the magic eyes, then bit him and dragged him off. Poor Mingo. Ah, it was horrible. Horrible, I tell you. The rotten, filthy reptile."
Gosim flung herself down, sobbing into the grass. Logalog pulled her roughly to her feet.
"Come on, don't lie there crying, shrew. The adder probably left a good wet trail for us to follow. Where did it happen?"
Gosim ran shakily some distance to the left. She pointed to the ground.
"Right here. You can see the great slithering marks. Look."
The evidence was quite clear. The wet path in the dry grass gleamed in the dark. They followed the trail with Matthias and Logalog in the lead. It twisted and turned tortuously over small hillocks, through hedges and across fields. Even when the wetness stopped, there was the musty odor of death clinging to the ground. At the top of a small rise, Matthias dropped into a crouch. Signaling everyone to do likewise, he pointed downwards.
"Look, Logalog. There."
Spread out beneath them was a vast, disused quarry. It was as if some gigantic hand had scooped a great hole in the landscape. The shape was roughly oval. The steep red sandstone sides were terraced halfway around into long, flat shelves. Piles of fallen stone were dotted about amid the defunct workings. The scant vegetation lent the quarry an air of stark desolation. They lay on the edge of the pit, straining their eyes into the dark floor area below. Steadily, Logalog gave orders to the gorilla shrews to retire back across the field where they could rest up and eat a much-needed meal. Only he and Gosim remained at the edge of the quarry with Matthias, who settled any further debate by saying,
"I'm going down there for a look around as soon as it's light."
"If you must go, then we will come with you," murmured Logalog.
Matthias shook his head.
"No, I cannot allow it. It's far too dangerous."
Gosim, who was fully recovered, spoke out courageously.
"You cannot stop us, Matthias. You are not a Union member. Therefore, we are not under your command. The rules clearly state this, so the decision is out of your paws. We go. You and Logalog get some sleep. I'll take first sentry duty."
The three friends slept in turns, relieving one another through the long watches of the night hours. Matthias was on duty when the first fingers of dawn probed the quarry. What a difference daylight made to the sinister nighttime appearance of the scene below. The sandstone ranged through a spectrum of pale sunlight gold, banded through every shade of yellow, fawn, umber brown, down to the dusty red sandstone that must have been hewed out in distant ages to provide the masons with material to build Redwall Abbey. He roused his companions to view the awesome spectacle.
"To think that all this peaceful beauty should hide such cold evil," he breathed wonderingly.
In silent Indian file, they began the descent. The going was not too hard. There were lots of handholds and steps, and the sandy rock was quite firm, not at all slippery. It took less than an hour for the three friends to climb down. they stood together on the flat quarry floor, gazing around.
"Supposing Poison Teeth decides to hunt today?"
whispered Gosim.
"I have a feeling he won't,"
Logolog replied.
"Asmodeus got a full day's hunt in yesterday. With the unexpected bonus of poor old Mingo on his way home, he'll probably sleep through today and go out to hunt tonight."
"So that gives us all day to find out where he is,"
added Matthias.
"Shall we look together or split up?"
"Stick together,"
said Gosim, as she and Logolog drew their short rapiers. Matthias took out his dagger. They started searching the quarry for a possible hole or concealed entrance. The trio scoured the lower slopes, poking and probing. They inspected underneath stunted bushes, turned over chunks of rock, crawled beneath huge slabs, always watching keenly for the telltale single winding track of the adder. The silence was oppressive. There was neither bird song nor the hum of insects inside the sunken arena. Having crisscrossed the floor, they progressed to the middle terraces, but the results were equally disappointing. All morning they had searched the quarry without any success. At midday, Logolog called a halt. They sat on a flat table-shaped rock halfway up and shared a hardtack lunch followed by a canteen of water. It was not a cheerful meal. They each sat with their own thoughts. Finally, Gosim stood up, dusting her fur off. She clapped her paws together in a brisk manner, urging her companions to resume the task.
"Right, come on, you two. We've only got half a day left."
Matthias and Logolog gathered up their packs and weapons as Gosim leaned on the side of a narrow slab and continued her summary.
"If we search around the top lip this afternoon, that only leaves us with the..."
The echo of the cry hung upon the still air. Gosim was gone. The narrow slab she had been leaning against swung loosely on a pivot. They had found the entrance to the lair of Asmodeus Poison Teeth. Chapter 5. Cluny the Scourge anxiously awaited the arrival of darkness. One of his three plans had reached fruition a lot earlier than he had expected. Kilconi had proved an invaluable help. He had been across to the woods to satisfy his curiosity about what the rats were doing there. It came as no surprise to the ferret to see a large siege tower under construction. However, there was a problem. The cart still lay upturned in the ditch. Try as they would, the rats had not been able to remove a set of wheels and an axle from it. Kilconi had a word with Cluny, and was immediately sent down to supervise the operation. The garrulous ferret showed the rat that he possessed a sound knowledge of the principles of fulcrum and leverage. He rigged a block and tackle to supplement a dead tree limb that they were using as a lever. Ignoring wheels and axles, he roped the cart to the block. With all the rats and a great deal of luck, he managed to lift the hay cart until it was halfway out of the ditch. Further pressure on the lever sent the hay cart past its own point of balance. The block and tackle parted under the strain, sending the ferret and the rats on the level shooting down into the ditch. By mistake, it did the trick. With a crash, the cart landed upright in the road. They pushed it into the woods. Kilconi oversaw the lifting of the tower onto the bed of the cart. Delighted by his own ingenuity, he added the final touches. In a short time, the siege tower, its wheels muffled with sacking, stood completed, ready for use. Cluny gathered his captains about him and outlined his strategy. Tonight, when it was dark, Fangburn would step up the attack on the gatehouse wall as a diversionary measure. Cluny would command a picked band of the best fighters. They would bring the siege tower from out of the cover of Mossflower Wood and wheel it to a part of the wall where the defense appeared weakest. Under the cover of darkness, they would filter from the top of the tower onto the ramparts. A quick slaughter of the defenders would leave Redwall wide open to them. Clooney watched the evening sky anxiously. It would not be long now. He signaled Fangburn to begin the diversionary assault. Yelling and shouting fearsome war cries, the attackers leaped from the ditch, peppering the ramparts with a hail of arrows, spears, and stones.
"Redwall to me! Come on, mice!" cried Constance. "Let's give better than we get! Redwall to me!"
Basil's stag Hare had formed three lines of bow mice on top of the wall. They worked with military efficiency as the Hare rapped out orders.
First rank, fire! Drop back, kneel, and reload! Second rank, fire! Drop back, kneel, and reload! Third rank, fire! Drop back, kneel, and reload! First rank, forward again, fire!
The commands continued unabated. Enemy soldiers fell stricken on the road. Darkclaw rushed about bringing up reinforcements.
Keep those slings throwing. Bring up extra spears. Close up that line. Don't fire until you see them stand.
John Churchmouse, Mr. Vole, and Friar Hugo ran about bending low. They collected up all the arrows, spears, and stones hurled by the horde, issuing them to the defenders.
Come on, otters. Give them back a taste of their own medicine.
Winifred urged her slingers on while directing fresh archers into the ranks of the bow mice. Constance and the beaver shared a stack of enemy spears. They returned them with frightening power and devastating aim. Ferret archers at the edge of the meadow found the range of Basil's bow mice. Several were felled before Jess Squirrel and Winifred, along with some crack otter slingers, sent down a barrage so swift and accurate that it decimated the ferrets within minutes. While the battle went ahead, ranging from the heights of the parapet to the depths of the ditch, the Joseph Bell rang out over the carnage. Clooney snapped the battered visor down on his war helmet. He wrapped Kilcone on his shoulder.
Good. Now is the time. Come on, ferret.
Together they slunk off down the ditch, running crouched over to the southeast corner of the wall where it was relatively quiet. Keeping noise down to a minimum, Clooney ordered his troops to bring forward the siege tower. Straining and pushing, the rat soldiers trundled the tall contraption from its woodland hiding place. The going was even harder across the short space of soft meadow ground. Clooney himself lent a claw, pulling on one of the lead ropes. He tugged mightily, causing the cumbersome tower to sway dangerously as it bumped over grassy hillocks.
"Bring it up close to the wall," he whispered urgently. "That's it. Now, make sure it's on an even keel. I don't want the top wobbling all over the place."
Stones and soil were tamped around the wheels, wedging them still. The great tower stood ready for use. When Friar Hugo hurried off to join the defenders, he left Cornflower in charge of the kitchens. She had busied herself with setting pans of oatmeal and oven bread ready for the next morning's breakfast. Cornflower then thought of the sentries up on the wall, and she set about making a large pan of vegetable soup. It was a great favorite with the defenders at night time, especially when she made it to her own recipe. Helped by Mrs. Vole and Mr. Squirrel, she ladled it into three big earthenware jugs. Taking up a jug each, with a small basket of fresh loaves and some goat cheese, they set off with Cornflower in the lead, carrying a lantern. The first stop was the southeast corner, where Formal and his crew had a monotonous task. Night and day they monitored the grounds for sounds of tunneling. They were glad of a short respite and some hot food, while they chatted to the caterers in their gruff, polite tones. Cornflower was never quite sure of what Formal was saying, but she loved listening to his funny, countrified mole dialect.
"Yer, missy. The rotten varmints be a-comin' up in 2 days, all, I reckon. Gar. We'm give 'em old Harry if'n they showered their heads."
Cornflower was only picking up one word in three, but by the fierce scowl on Formal's face, she was certain that the rats would not find it a pleasant experience being given old Harry. Formal tugged his nose graciously at her.
Thank ye kindly. Not like vegetable soup to keep loafing these moles.
Mr. Squirrel chuckled to Cornflower and Mr. Vole.
Well, I take it the moles are quite fond of homemade vegetable soup. I know my Jess'll be ready for some.
Yes, and so would Sam if he weren't fast asleep in bed,
Cornflower replied.
Look, you and Mrs. Vole start serving along by the gatehouse. Keep your heads low and be careful. I'll start up here at the corner and see you back at the kitchen later.
With the lantern and basket in one paw and the jug in the other, Cornflower ascended the steps at the southeast corner of the wall. Brother Rufus assisted her up onto the ramparts.
Ah, the young field mouse with the magic soup. Nice to see you, Cornflower. It gets lonely up this end where there's no action.
Brother Rufus held out his mug. He watched gratefully through the cloud of steam that arose from the jug.
That smells good. Vegetable soup, my favorite.
Cornflower was not listening. She was staring open-mouthed across Brother Rufus's shoulder. The soup was overflowing from the mug and spattering on the stones as she continued to pour. Across the top of the rampart, a ramshackle wooden platform had appeared as if from nowhere. Perched on top of it, ready to spring, was a villainous-looking rat with a cutlass clenched between his teeth. Cornflower shrieked aloud. More by accident than design, Brother Rufus spun around and sent the scalding contents of his mug splashing full into the rat's eyes. With a piercing wail of agony, the rat fell from the top of the platform. Scarcely aware of what she was doing, Cornflower threw the lantern. It shattered on top of the siege tower, drenching the dead wood in lamp oil. Instantly, the flames licked hungrily over the platform, turning it into an inferno. Attracted by the flaring blaze that lit the night, defenders rushed from all quarters to see what was happening. Over 30 rats were in the high reaches of the burning tower. Many more were in the middle, and still more on the lower frames. Rats were kicking and fighting each other to get down from the blazing tower. They bit and trampled and slashed. Some jumped while others were pushed, screaming as they fell to the field far below. Clooney ran about in a berserk rage. Temporarily bereft of his senses, he seized hold of smoldering injured rats, some with their fur alight.
"Get back up there, you cowards! Jump onto the wall!"
he screamed in his madness. The rats, who had been attacking the gatehouse, left off fighting and ran down the road to the fiery holocaust. Sparks crackled and shot off into the night sky. Clooney lashed out at all and sundry with his tail, foaming at the mouth and cursing wildly, his face a terrifying mask of insanity in the glare from the tower.
"It's only a bit of fire. Get back up there, you blundering fools! Kill the mice!"
Darkclaw and Fangburn grabbed hold of Clooney's smoldering cloak. They dragged him backwards.
"Get out of the way, Chief! It's starting to fall!"
With a roaring crackle and snap of blazing timber, the siege tower leaned crazily to one side. It tottered, then collapsed in a flaring sheet of flame and sparks. The hay wagon listed drunkenly and was pulled over onto its side where it lay burning furiously. The incident put an end to that night's fighting. On top of the wall, cheering broke out. Cornflower was the heroine of the hour. She blushed as Formal nodded admiringly.
"Are you looking more handsome in this light, Moissy? Here, you gotten any vegetable soup left? Didn't give it all to those varmints, did ye?"
Below the wall was a scene of mass carnage. The ground was littered with the bodies of attackers who had fallen prey to the flames in the ill-starred venture of the siege tower. Surrounded by his captains, Clooney was led down to the safety of the ditch. Apparently unaware of anything about him, he muttered dark words to himself, strange things that others could not comprehend. Behind the warlord's back, the captains looked at each other in a puzzled fashion. Had the mind of Clooney the Scourge finally snapped? The fire had dwindled to smouldering embers by the next morning. Constance and the abbot looked at the results from the ramparts. A wide area of the meadowland was burned black and scorched flat. Even now, parts of it sizzled in the morning dew.
"Thank goodness it did not spread to the woods," said the abbot. "Otherwise all of Mossflower might have gone up in flames."
The badger stared sadly at the scorched earth.
"True. No side uses fire as a weapon. Not even Clooney. It's the one thing that spells certain death to creatures on both sides. We must look on it as an accident, Father Abbot."
"Accident or not, we owe Cornflower a debt of gratitude," replied the abbot. "She is a brave young field mouse. But for her swift action, we would all have been under the heel of the tyrant today."
In the abbey kitchens, Cornflower stirred the oatmeal and checked on the bread baking in the oven. She smiled to herself. What would Matthias have thought of it all? Last night's heroine, this morning's cook. Chapter 6. While Logalog held the rock from closing, Matthias peered into the hole. It was a long, dark tunnel sloping down the side of the quarry stone. There was neither sight nor sound of Gosim. They called her name in loud whispers, not wanting to shout for fear of disturbing the snake. Matthias became impatient.
"Come on, Logalog. We'll have to go in there. Be as quiet as you can."
"Wait a tick,"
the shrew replied. Taking a small boulder, he jammed the entrance slab from swinging shut.
"I'm ready now. Lead on, Matthias."
They ventured cautiously into the long, sloping passage, digging in their heels to prevent themselves sliding right down as Gosim probably had done. On reaching the bottom, they stood a while to let their eyes become accustomed to the gloom. The floor leveled out. The tunnel was high and broad enough to allow them to walk side by side without stooping. As they walked further, Logalog pointed at strange symbols and weird signs that had been scraped into the surface of the soft stone. Though the quarry tunnels were natural, they had obviously been lairs of generations of serpents. Most of the signs were of a reptilian nature. The friends pressed onwards until the passage broadened out into a small chamber with two more tunnels leading from it.
"You take the left, and I'll take the right," Matthias whispered. "Mark an arrow on the wall with your sword at intervals. I'll do the same with my dagger. That way we won't get lost. Should you find Asmodeus, come straight back to this chamber. If he finds you, then the best thing to do is run as fast as you can and shout like mad."
"Take care, warrior. I'll see you later," said Logalog.
Gripping his dagger in readiness, Matthias crept into the right-hand tunnel. It was slightly narrower than the first, but just as high. The walls were yellow stone so soft that it was almost like damp sand. Scarcely daring to breathe, and glad that his feet made no sound on the sandy floor, Matthias went ahead, remembering to mark an arrow every few yards. From somewhere up ahead, the young mouse could hear the sound of dripping water. The musical, echoing plops made an eerie noise in the sinister stillness of the passage. His paw encountered a space in the left wall. It turned out to be a rectangular anteroom. Matthias was horrified to discover that it was full of cast-off snakeskins. They lay about on the floor, dry and withered. He shuddered at the thought of their former occupants, the hairs rising on the nape of his neck as he swiftly abandoned the repulsive scene and hurried along the passage. It was more than twice as long as the entrance tunnel. As Matthias cut another arrow into the wall, he noticed that the carved symbols looked older, more primitive. This place had been a serpent's den long before it had been a quarry. The passage ended abruptly. Matthias walked out into an immense cavern. Great hall of red wall would have fitted into a corner of this colossal structure. At its center was a vast shimmering lake that glowed with a pale phosphorescent light. The droplets of water came from somewhere high up in the dark recesses of the roof. They dripped steadily down and broke the surface of the subterranean lake, causing a continuous ripple. Matthias noticed that there were numerous other caverns and tunnels leading from this large cave.
Asmodeus!
The sound froze the very blood in his veins. The adder was close by. Where, he could not tell. The deadly hiss echoed all around him.
Asmodeus!
Matthias bravely tried to quell the panic that welled up inside him. If the snake knew where I was, he wouldn't waste his time trying to scare me, he reasoned. He would have got me by now. Feeling slightly reassured, but still very uneasy, Matthias circled the pool, trying hard to ignore the loathsome hissing sound.
Asmodeus!
Summoning up his courage, he stole silently into the nearest cave. In the glow that reflected from the pool, Matthias saw a sight that gladdened his heart. There was Gosim seated with her back against the wall. Matthias ran across and seized the gorilla shrew by her paw.
Gosim, how did you get here, you little nuisance? We've been si-
Gosim toppled on her side, dead. With a strangled sob, the young mouse recoiled. He could see the poison fang marks clearly upon the shrew's chest. Gosim's face was bloated, the eyes screwed shut, the lips blackened.
Asmodeus!
Matthias stumbled from the gruesome death larder of the adder out into the main cavern. He sat for a while shuddering with horror at what he had seen, hardly believing that the still body had been a warm, living, breathing creature not long ago. Forcing himself to rise and carry on, Matthias continued his explorations. The next entrance was a tiny hole in the wall, scarcely worth bothering about. Nevertheless, he decided to investigate it. Crouching on all fours, Matthias forced his way into the hole, which proved to be another tunnel. He began forcing his way along its narrow length.
Asmodeus!
The dreadful sound was much closer now. Struggling and pushing forward, he came to the end of the tunnel. Suddenly, Matthias was face to face with the giant adder.
Asmodeus!
The huge reptile was sleeping. With every breath it expelled, the snake's tongue flickered out, repeating the vile name,
Asmodeus!
Matthias stared in mute fascination. The snake's eyes were not shut, but filmed over in sleep. It was breathing slowly and regularly. The huge, muscular, scaly body was coiled in no recognizable pattern. At odd intervals, the immense coils would shift lazily with a dry, scaly rustle. The head, however, remained fixed in the same position. Across the jumble of banded coils, Matthias thought he could catch a glimpse of the tapering tail. There were other things in the lair of the snake. A fox's tail, wood pigeon wings.